Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg.
And James Kvosvik.
Hey, James. You know, I know you're just coming out of the SMRP conference when we're recording this, and it sounded like you were pretty busy. You had a booth there with Eruditio. You had your recording booth there for podcasts recording. I think you had a seminar or a paper or a workshop or all three or something like that. You were all over that place.
Yeah, I had two papers plus a workshop plus the two booths. So it was pretty busy. It was definitely a good time, but it was busy.
Good. And, was it a good turnout, good crowd?
All that it was a big crowd. What was interesting is 50% or somewhere in that range were first-time attendees.
Wow.
So it's very interesting to see, you know, the amount of new people that keep coming to these conferences, trying to learn about all this stuff, see all this stuff for the first time. It's actually pretty interesting to have those conversations with people that are new to these types of conferences.
James, that's awesome. I mean, I know you get a chance to talk to all kinds of people, and so people new to the conference, but not necessarily new to the industry. What's that change about? What do you get a sense of why they're showing up?
You know what? I'm not sure. I heard different things. You know, some people were saying that, you know, our company finally wants to start looking at how do we fix maintenance or improve maintenance. Others are like, it's finally in my area. And you know, my boss wouldn't approve me to go down to Florida for the conferences.
Yeah, but Las Vegas or Florida and Hawaii are bad venues.
Exactly. So, you know, there's some of that. Some people are just like, you know, I've been in this a couple of years. I want to learn more. I know there's more to it. So, you know, a variety of different reasons why they're coming. But what was interesting is they're all kind of still struggling with the same things that everyone else has been struggling with for the last however many years.
Yeah. They show up and after the first session, they go, these are my people.
Yep. They realize they're not alone in the pain.
That's right. That's right. Now, it's one of the things I've noticed, though, in there's so many conferences out there. And I know that you attend and tell me about these all through the year as you go to PMAX events and SMRP events and all kinds of stuff. And it sounds like SMRP had a pretty healthy turnout and a good number of people showing up. But I've seen it in other conferences that the attendance is dwindling. It is getting tougher and tougher to get funded to go to a conference for a week. So it's good to know that this conference is doing well. And I know there's so many things you can learn there. But in general, if you look at all the other events you're going to, what kind of trends are you seeing?
Well, you know, it's interesting. So Louisville, Kentucky, you know, where we had the SMRP conference this year, I think it missed the all-time attendance record by, you know, a small amount, like 20, 30 people.
Wow.
But it's in Louisville, Kentucky, and the all-time attendance records usually are down in Orlando, that type of area, right? Mm-hmm, so there's a vacation draw, I get it. But, you know, I think a lot of it has to do with the location. Because I've been to some conferences that they're really good one year, and the next year they're low. And then the next year they're great, but it's different locations.
Right. Yeah, if they go to Seattle, it's a little tougher, unless you're in an aerospace or software industry. If you go to San Diego and you're in military devices and naval stuff, you get a great attendance, but if it's software, there's nobody shows up. Yeah. You got to know where the audience is, but Louisville, it probably is close enough to draw from Tennessee and Ohio and Indiana. I mean, that's a quick drive for some of those folks.
Yeah. And you know, there was a bunch of people from California I talked with and, you know, all over the place. Mm-hmm. But I'm not seeing the downward trend of attendance in conferences. I still see them, you know, right up there close to the attendance records. People are still engaged. I actually saw someone that I used to work with like 10 years ago, and I haven't seen him since at the conference. And he lives just down the road from me. So, so it's interesting because all these new people are coming to try and learn what can they do differently. What is out there? I heard a couple people say that they just wanted to see all the new technologies and processes and systems that are out there. But others have come to try and solve a very specific problem.
Right. Yeah, and it's obvious they're asking the same question to you and all your competitors.
Exactly.
Which is a good use of, you know, trade show, and just the, you never know who you're going to run into and pick up just the right piece of advice. And that, I think that's part of why the conferences work. It's such a concentration of learning opportunities, but also the networking, which going online is much, much harder to make happen. You can attend courses on demand or when you want, but rarly are those courses set up to talk to the other students.
Right? Exactly.
It's harder to do webinars somewhat. I try to engage a lot with the audience, and I know I'm successful when there's crosstalk in the chat window on the webinar, folks talking to each other and asking questions of each other. And that's usually cool. I just keep talking. I let them.
Yep, absolutely. But yeah, there's something to be said for the ability to talk to someone, explain what's going on, get their feedback, talk through ideas together. You know, mm-hmm. You can't beat that.
Yeah, no, there's a lot to that. Now, how about professional meetings, the local chapter meetings and stuff? Do you get involved with much of those?
You know, unfortunately, there isn't a local chapter around my area for either SMRP or PMAC. Okay. You know, there's not. I've been asked to go. I've attended a couple local chapter events, you know, not too far, 4 or 5 hours away, that type of thing. Mm-hmm. And they seem to be pretty good events. You know, they're run well. They're organized. It's not just advertising by a vendor who sponsored it or whatever the case is.
Right.
It seems to be very good events.
Okay.
But I find that it has a lot to do with who's in charge of that chapter. Dictates what's happening with it, right?
Oh yeah. Yeah. There's no doubt about it. I get a kick out of Rob's Reliability Project when he does a meetup. He knows he's going to be in Calgary, so he does a meetup at a local brew pub. Usually gets a pretty good turnout.
Yeah, he does. You know, that's awesome. The more people we can get together, talk about this stuff, work through these issues, the better.
Oh, yeah. Now, you know, I'm seeing almost the exact opposite, though, in the design, in the product reliability world. Conference attendance are down. More and more the paid webinars are getting canceled because they just can't get enough people to them. I wonder if the money's shifting to into the manufacturing realms and factory settings to, hey, we got to get this right. We have an opportunity here, and and I don't want to get into the politics of it, but more and more companies are onshoring and seeing that happening. It puts more demand on the entire industry for keeping your systems running.
Yep, absolutely. And you know what? That might be the case of why we're seeing more and more attendance this way, while we see attendance dropping off in the product development side of things. Mm-hmm. I also think that, you know, we've been doing this asset management or maintenance and reliability stuff for a long time now. Mm-hmm. But everyone still has a long way to go. It's not like everyone's running simulations and models and understanding, you know, failure modes. Like, organizations are still trying to figure out what a failure mode is, mm-hmm. still trying to stock spare parts based not on emotion. There's a lot of that still going on. So I think there's a lot of low-hanging fruit that people are trying to take advantage of or grab right now while they can.
You know, I saw it in the quality world, right? 30 years ago, we did total quality management and we had all these cool tools, and it's morphed into lean Six Sigma type stuff. Yet that entire industry, as professional societies and as a discipline, is waning, mostly because organizations are saying, well, just hiring a quality engineer doesn't solve the problem. That thinking has to be done by the team, right? It's all of the engineers have a role in that. And so more and more of those tools and techniques and thinking have been embedded in the rest of the organization. So you don't need a separate track for the quality team. Reliability is kind of gone that way also. When I was at Hewlett Packard, there were, I don't know, 50 product line divisions, and there was probably on the order of 20 people that would have a business card that said reliability engineer, right? But each of those divisions had people that championed reliability, yet it was usually embedded in the electrical engineering team or the mechanical engineering team or the software team. It had grown and matured enough that it moved on. It wasn't a separate discipline anymore. And the maintenance world, I think from the reliability engineering standpoint, I think they're just now finding their footing, right? They're proving over and over again that they're becoming valuable. I think we've been hearing that message now for 10 years that these people help you make your bottom line work, you know, kind of thing. But eventually I'm going to forecast here that that's going to evolve away. It'll get built into the ops team. It'll get built into the design teams that bring in plants. It'll get built into the maintenance crews and management of those maintenance teams, that the reliability elements will be incorporated, and then you won't need a separate reliability team.
Yeah, and that might be the case. I think, you know, we might be, more and more organizations are considering that. They're given basic, you know, reliability training to operators and supervisors and stuff like that. And I see organizations going that way, but I still think it's not prevalent. We still have a long way to go.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And it does take decades for a transition like that to mature and blossom and go. And then you and I are still going to be in business 20, 30 years from now. And we're going to walk into a plant that's still using pulleys and water wheels to power the place.
You know? Exactly.
And, yeah, it ain't broke yet. We just keep running, you know, kind of thing. But it did, I don't know. It's a varying process. Now, I know that you guys at Eruditio do some, you know, interesting type training and blended learning and stuff like that. But the face-to-face is that still your dominant role or dominant process? Do you see that being key?
The way we do that teaching is it's not just, you know, the e-learning or not just the instructor led, it's all of them for a specific curriculum. So, if you're going through a reliability engineering training, it is instructor led. It is face to face for one part. Then it's e-learning. Then it's followed up with remote coaching and maybe more face to face. So it encompasses all three aspects of it. And that's, I think, what makes it effective, right? We make sure we hit the different learning styles, but people still want face to face. They just do not want an e-learning package to, you know, sit there and go through and not be able to interact, not be able to ask questions, those sorts of things.
Yeah, I think there's something to that. And the e-learning world and the online world, and I'm including webinars where it's a live instructor, you know, doing a presentation and answering questions to courses that are live, but online, to the autonomous ones where they're standalone. I think each has their own application and benefits compared to doing face-to-face, but also distractors, right? It's not as, you can't see the body language from the instructor or from the student when it's on a screen. I mean, there are cameras, but we're still not there yet. And it's glitchy enough that it's just not the same. And so we're getting there. There's more and more emphasis for online stuff and more training, but some things just lend themselves to that, right? Here's a procedure. There's 10 steps to do an FMEA. Here, let's step through that and define everything and make sure you understand the basics. And then we'll get together and practice it, right? I think there's applications for each of these modes of teaching.
Absolutely. Because, you know, we hit the different learning styles. You know, you can only take away so much from e-learning sometimes. You need to actually get up and practice it and have someone help you through some of those barriers, if you will.
Right, right. You don't even know the barriers until you practice it. That's exactly the key part. Yeah. It varies all over the map. Anyway, I keep seeing more and more desire to... Well, I don't know. I think I even sent one or two references to you. These guys in the Middle East want you to come out there for a week and teach the CRE prep course or the CMRP prep course or things like that. And every time I've offered them saying, you know, I'm going to charge you a lot to travel out there, how about we just do it online? And they're like, nope, that's just not going to work. It has to be in person. And I have not understood that phenomena. I struggle with that.
Yeah, it's, well, you know, online can be effective if it's done well. If it's a combination of, you know, self-guided e-learning, you know, WebEx, remote coaching, you know, homework assignments, if you combine all aspects, you can make it effective. Mm-hmm. But to do that, it requires a very well thought out approach, a really well thought out curriculum. Mm-hmm. And the biggest thing I find is it puts a lot of responsibility on the learner to actually do it.
Well, that's, I'm thinking of folks that go to like Coursera or EDX and the other university free courses that are being offered from hundreds of different university programs now. You can become very well educated, but you have to be motivated. You got to turn it on. You got to go do the reading. You got to do the work, right?
Well, that's it. Now, when I go to a class, I can just go to the class, be there, and I may not learn anything, but I was there. I can demonstrate that I was there. For some people, that might be all they need.
Yeah, but it's not a lot of fun teaching prisoners. This is what I call them, is people that are, their boss says, go take this class, and they don't know why, and they don't know how they're ever going to use it. And they don't like spending a day here. They got something that they got to go do. Right? I call them prisoners. There's not much value in that.
No, there's not, but they can check the box, if you will.
Yeah. See, that's pretty low bar there, James.
You're told to go for training. You're going to go for training, right? So you sit there for the 3 days, right? Think of the ADKAR model. You have to create awareness. Then you got to create a desire. Mm-hmm. Then you can impart knowledge. So if they don't have an awareness of why they're there, what they're doing, and they have no desire to learn it, they're not going to.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, it's very true. And I guess part of what we need to do, I'm thinking now for Ascendo and the folks that are listening to the podcast, they made the conscious choice to do that. Now, after episode 300, they might have just been, you know, they get in the car and they turn it on and we show up. It's in the queue. That'd be great. But the ones that are truly engaged, right, hopefully take away quite a bit from it, understand the conversation and look at it. But that's, I think, relevant whether it's going to a conference or going to an evening meeting or doing an out live class or wherever. It's you, that awareness and desire have to be done prior to.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. It's with so much knowledge coming up, and I'm thinking back to the SMRP conference, and half the people there were their first time, is there was a lot of folks that said, either my boss said I should go, or it's part of my learning development program, or I was curious, or whatever. There was a lot of decisions made either by the person or by people that influenced that person to do the awareness and create the desire. So they go. Although there's been a couple of them in Orlando that I have conferences I've been to where not even half the people that signed in actually attended. They're off playing somewhere, vacationing. So the desire there was a different desire than intended.
Exactly. So, you know, and I think with e-learning, it's very easy to see, did you participate? Did you do it? Right. You can mm-hmm. track and see when they did, how long did they spend, all this stuff. There's all these analytics that can tell you whether they actually did it or not, or they just clicked through.
Right.
Whereas if I go to a 3-day workshop, I can sit there for 3 days and take away nothing. Right. So it's the responsibility piece, right? Ahead of time.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the tricky part. Well, anyway, I'm glad that SMRP went well. You had a great time. And in general, that the attendance at the conferences and stuff is there. It bodes well for, one, this kinds of work you guys do at Erudicio and us as consultants in general. But I think the notion of training to somebody that wants to get it versus not is a key difference. And I turn that over to our audience and go, you know, one, thanks for listening, but two, it's hopefully you take notes or hopefully you notice things. So if you've got a training program coming up, is it mandated or are you creating that awareness and desire prior? Why is this important? What's the deal? There's only so much that third party instructors can do. It's got to be built into the business for that knowledge and that change to occur. And that's an ongoing process, whether you ask somebody to read a book or follow a procedure or go to a conference.
Now, that's one of the things, though, that the line managers or sponsors of these trainings can do is they can sit down with the people that are going to the training, to the conference, reading the book, whatever it is, and say, here's what I want from you in return. What is the one thing you're going to implement? What is, you know, what's your key learning, whatever. Have that conversation ahead of time so they understand the expectations before they attend that training, read the book, or go to the conference. Then we can hold them accountable. But if we don't provide that expectation ahead of time, how do you hold them accountable?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, it varies. So let's, as you're listening to this in the audience, if you're listening to this and thinking, you know, you're self-motivated and you want to go learn, which I believe most of our audience, by the way, James, is self-motivated.
Yes.
But how do you show that it's useful, whether it's somebody going to a conference or somebody going listening to a podcast? How do you show the value of that time investment back to you? And I'd be curious how you do it. I have some ideas, but I think that's going to be a subject for a whole nother show. So head over to ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR, and you'll find a comment form there, and you can get a hold of either James or I through our emails or through LinkedIn, whatever works for you. But we'd love to hear your feedback on, you know, what's that measure? How do you get the most out of the time you're investing in learning? And if you have some successes, that would be really awesome to hear too. So we look forward to hearing from you. So with that, James, I'm glad you had a great conference, and I suspect you're going to have many more coming up. And I usually suspect, you're going to be traveling a bunch. So we'll see you out there.
All right. Thanks, Fred.
All right. Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation if you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show. Please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.